This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, the business station. This is Cruise Control, the car show here on BFM 89.9. You might wonder why I'm doing that. We might have a link to Formula One a little bit later on.
Oh, yeah.
See, last time I did that, you mocked me for going, meow.
Because that sounds like you just stepped on your cat.
That, of course, was Daniel Fernandez from DSF.my here in the studio. Say hello, Daniel. That's better. And, of course, over there, it is the man with the news, Mr. Arif Ruse. Say hello.
I'm not going to do any car sounds.
You have to do a car sound. Come on, join the fun. That's a modern
Formula One vehicle.
Yes, of course. The reason we're talking about this is because the legend that was Niki Lauda passed away very recently. We'll be covering a bit of history if you didn't already know it. We'll then have Thailand's grand electric plan coming up, and of course some car launches in just a few moments. And then we have a car review. It is the Audi Q8. Don't go anywhere then, because coming up right now, it is the man with the news, the legendary Arif Ruse.
Not as legendary as Niki Lauda. If you've been following the news, he recently passed away at the age of 70. But he will be remembered for his gutsy attitude to racing. Daniel, did you ever see him race?
On TV, yes. Live, never. But I have to say this, I've met the man a few times.
Oh, have you?
At the racetrack. He has never shied away from saying hello, taking pictures. Mm. He's not one of those legends who stands around with a couple of bodyguards and pretends that he's too busy. He's a very approachable man. He's a true gentleman. Sad day when I found out he had passed on. And I think I remember going through Twitter and everyone was talking about it. Mm-hmm. Even people not involved in motorsports were just giving tributes to him. This is truly a legend. And I don't think there will ever be another racing legend like him.
I think the biggest one that came out from social media was Lewis Hamilton. I think he said something like, Niki Lauda helped him hone his racing skills to what he is today.
Yes.
But I've never seen Niki Lauda race. He was a very brave driver.
Yeah.
And I really don't know much of his story. So I decided to look it up. And apparently, when he began, he actually took out a £30,000 loan to buy his way into the March Formula 2 team in 1971. And then from there, he got promoted to the Formula 1 team. In 1973, he bought his way into British Racing Motors, BRM, before Enzo Ferrari decided to hire him and paid all of his debts away.
Enzo basically went, you're the future of Formula One. I'm going to pay off all your debts.
What he was known for, I suppose, was the crash in the 1976 Nürburgring GP. So the Nürburgring is one of the oldest, one of the longest racetracks in the world. Currently is measuring about 21 kilometers, but back then it used to run about 25, 27 kilometers. One lap would take 7-8 minutes. In 1976, he was the fastest, but he tried to get all the other drivers to sign a petition to get the race to be stopped because there was a huge...
He knew it was dangerous.
He knew it was dangerous, yes. There was a huge lack of safety resources. I mean, it's such a big track. You need so many fire marshals and all that stuff. But in any case, the race went ahead. And on the second lap, on this corner called Bergwerk, it's quite a deceptive corner and it was very dangerous. So he skids and he hits the wall and bursts into flames. Niki Lauda was trapped. Three other drivers stopped their cars, endangering themselves to pull him out. But it was too late because Lauda's helmet actually slipped off his head, causing severe burns to his head. And he inhaled toxic gases that damaged his lungs. And he eventually slipped into a coma. And in that event, he lost most of his right ear, a lot of his hair, his eyebrows, eyelids, and he had to get a facial reconstruction to blink normally again. And you know that signature red hat that he wears, if I'm not mistaken, came after that accident because he needed something to cover up those scars.
To cover up his marks,
And if you want to see the recreation of this event, there is that movie called Rush, where it basically paints a picture of him and his rivalry with another really popular racing driver called James Hunt and the eventual crash. And it stars Chris Hemsworth, Olivia Wilde, and Daniel Brühl. I think it's quite a great film.
They've painted him entirely differently. So you've got James Hunt, who's the kind of dashing, drinking, womanizing, typical 007 kind of style driver. And then you have Niki Lauda, who's this kind of, they've painted him as this bit of a wild card, bit of a wild child, but still technically brilliant. It's worth a watch for sure.
I've watched it 7 times. I love the movie. Yeah.
Well, after this whole accident at the Nürburgring, he actually only missed 2 races. He was still wearing a bloody bandage on his head, as his other teammates remembered. The following season, in 1977, he actually won the championship as if nothing went wrong, but he explained to the media that he was petrified by the accident. In 1978, he told Ferrari that he has no more desire to drive around in circles and decided to start his own airline called Lauda Air. And then in 1982, he rejoins F1, decides that he still wants to drive around in circles with McLaren on a $3 million salary. And in 1984, his final ever championship that he won, he actually beat Alain Prost by half a point. I'll give you some fun facts as well, actually.
Go on, then.
His trademark red cap, advertisers apparently paid up to $1 million to feature their brands on his hat because he wore that everywhere.
And he was always being filmed. He was that guy that loved to be on camera. Yeah. Also, he got to drive the BT46 Brabham fan car
as well.
Yeah,
the fan car.
Lucky devil.
If you don't know what the fan car is, in the olden days of Formula One, they just strapped...
Don't say olden days. You make it sound like medieval.
It's 40 years ago, guys.
it basically had a big fan underneath that was supposed to extract fumes underneath the car. But we all know secrets. What else it did. It helped pull the car to the floor. Very smart technology. There you go. Rest in peace, Niki Lauda. Thank you very much for everything that you've done for all Formula One fans. We're going to move on though now, Arif. What's this grand electric plan that Thailand have got?
So you know how everybody's talking about save the world, climate change and all that stuff?
Yes.
And new cars being electric vehicles and how it will definitely cut down global emissions. Thailand, via a state-owned electricity power company called EGAT, they apparently want to modify used cars and turn them into electric vehicles, which is quite an interesting idea.
Haven't we spoken about this before? Have we mentioned this before?
No.
If we haven't, then I did on one of my previous shows.
What did you say?
Good idea. Yeah. Slightly impractical, though, because this is the kind of conclusion that we came to, but I'm not a car person, as you know.
Okay.
Because there's a whole bunch of different versions of these vehicles, different years, different kind of body stuff. Body stuff. You see how technical I am right here. You know what I mean, right? You know I'm talking business. Body stuff. I like the idea of it, but I'm not so sure how it would work practically. Daniel might be able to shed a bit more light.
Well, you've seen over the last year or maybe more, a lot of manufacturers, like somebody took the old Mini Cooper and made it electric.
Yep.
Somebody took an old Jag E-Type and made it electric. You can do this. It's not difficult to do.
They're individual ones.
Yeah, individual, and you got a garage or a specialist who's sitting down and saying, I want to do this. If you look at the timeline he takes to do it, it just does not make sense.
Right.
Everybody can come up with an idea, just like how we got people who want to make a flying car. Someone in Thailand can just come up with an idea and say, you know, I'm going to take some old cars, I'm going to make it electric, and it's going to be a success. It's just an idea. Mm. Let's see them put it into practice.
They've been saying that the three cars shortlisted that they want to turn into EVs is the Toyota Vios, the Honda Jazz, and the Nissan Almera. They've put these cars through a bit of a testing phase to measure the cost of conversions, right? And apparently it costs about 300,000 baht, which is about 40,000 ringgit. And that's a lot of money.
It doesn't make sense because these cars are old cars anyway.
But I still think the idea is solid because, like you say, you know, there's a lot of other garages and small-time mechanics that can do these things.
Right.
But again, it all comes down to cost, right?
I mean, it's a great idea. At 40,000 ringgit, you might want to wait just 2 or 3 years until electric car prices have come down
price. The other thing is also, when you do conversions like this, what about the safety standards?
Right.
You know, crash testing and all that. Nothing's been done. And, you know, these batteries are not lightweight stuff. And where are you going to position them? And if you get into an accident, is it going to explode? Is it going to implode? Are the airbags going to work if these cars have their airbags still active?
Yep.
All these kind of questions are going to come into play. So I think, you know, Thailand, you know, again, like Malaysia, like Cambodia, Vietnam, Indonesia, people can come up with great ideas. Whether it's feasible or not, that's another story. We'll wait and see.
It's speaking about the feasibility and the cost of it, right? Part of the reason why we're seeing a lot of these conversions happening in the UK and US is because there has been a lot of Teslas running around since 2012.
True.
So those that end up in the junkyards, people just pick it up for maybe $8,000 to $10,000 and just plonk it into an old 911 or old Range Rover or something like that.
Exactly.
And that kind of makes sense. Whereas over here, we don't have a junkyard to pull it out of, I think.
Not yet.
Not yet.
We still have a few Nissan Leafs running around, first generation. They will be going to the junkyard soon.
Yeah.
We have all those cars that were taken in for those, you know, electric car program with Tanaga National.
Yeah.
Renaults. They're sitting in a warehouse somewhere collecting dust.
What a shame.
Yeah. So you still have some junkyards here.
Okay, move on. What have we got? Local car launches.
First of which is a Hyundai Hyundai Starex is the facelift. The 11-seater is now selling for 3,000 ringgit more at 152,000 ringgit.
11-seater football team car.
11-seater, yes.
It has to be more than 10-seater to get the tax concession.
Oh, really?
What's yes. sort of tax concession?
There's a tax, you see, if it's an MPV, uh-huh. it's an 8-seater or 9-seater.
Right.
Uh-huh. But when it goes to 10, 11, 12...
Minibus.
Yes.
Okay.
That's interesting.
The more you know.
Right.
moving on, Kia Picanto, I think my favorite small car.
Oh,
moment,
I agree.
They've launched two new lines. One of them is called the KX. It starts at 45,000 ringgit. And... it's a safer Prodo Axia.
But the way you went made me worry a little bit then.
It's a very basic spec. You got steelies, you got halogen lights, manual mirrors and manual rear windows. And you don't have an infotainment screen. You get the one with the basic buttons. But right. it still has the basic safety stuff like ESP and ABS and six airbags. Whereas the Axia, which sells for about 3,000 ringgit less,
right.
has a lower safety rating, less airbags, but a bit more equipment.
A lot more equipment. But the thing is, this makes a great city ride-sharing.
Yeah.
Of course, the boot is not so big,
yeah.
but it's comfortable at the back.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think it's something which should be considered by the ride-sharing community. But the problem is, the brand name Kia has still got a little bit of a stigma with Malaysians for many reasons, but they're trying very hard to solve that problem. That is why this car, when it came out, like Arif said, it's a good car, it's very attractive, a lot of great features, great asking price, 52,000 yeah. fully loaded, and yet you don't see many on the road.
Moving on, the Toyota Avanza facelift, 81 to 88,000 ringgit.
Before this Avanza came out, people were talking, oh, Mini Alphard, Mini Alphard. You know, when people say that, I want to laugh at them because you know why? It's not a Mini Alphard, it's an Avanza.
I feel like it's a rush that they've elongated.
Yes, and you know, the thing is, everyone wants to own an Alphard and they can't own it. So when this comes out with the aggressive grille and a lot of chrome, they say, oh, Mini Alphard. There is no way it's a Mini Alphard. It's still an Avanza. It's a very practical, low price MPV. You never see an Avanza breaking down. It's so low in terms of maintenance costs.
This new facelift, you get quite a bunch of new equipment.
A lot,
a lot. LED headlights, electric mirrors, new infotainment with Apple CarPlay and Android Auto, which is huge. Reverse camera, a blind spot monitoring system, and a rear cross traffic alert system, which is big because the old Avanza was very, very basic, wasn't it? Moving on to BMW. On your website, it says that BMW is apparently going to sell Volvos right now.
No. BMW dealers are opening Volvo dealerships.
Why would they do that?
Because they're expanding their business. For example, if I am now currently selling Gardenia bread and I think my bread business is doing well, I might want to sell Massimo bread also with in a different shop.
I feel like there's a long tie-in over here.
So, Ingress Auto.
I know what game he's playing.
I know what game he's playing. A very well-renowned and stable BMW dealer in Malaysia. Seong Ho from Southern Part, also a very, very famous and well-known BMW dealer. And Sime Darby, which we all know are one of the biggest BMW dealers in Malaysia, have all decided to go into the Volvo business also.
BMW has also released some photos of the new 1 Series. Headlines, I think we'll see it sometime in the fall of this year, quarter three.
Sorry, I have to interrupt. I'm Malaysian. What's fall? When is fall?
Autumn.
I knew I had to say quarter three.
We only have one season here.
But anyway, the new 1 Series is...
Two. Hot, wet.
Hot, wet.
Anyway, the new 1 Series is basically based on a Mini Cooper. So it'll be front-wheel drive. The top-of-the-line M135i could have 302 horsepower with a detachable four-wheel drive system,
right.
whereas the bottom line is a front wheel drive and could be powered by 1.5 liter, probably 130-140 horsepower, right. something
have
like
you
that.
Seen how it looks?
Yes,
it looks a lot like the A-Class.
It does
a lot like the A-Class. the silhouette.
Moving on swiftly along to Volkswagen. Apparently, there's news that the Passat facelift and an Arteon could be coming here.
Yes, I like the Arteon.
They said they were going to launch the Arteon about 2 years ago.
Yes. Actually, it went to Singapore last year.
Yeah.
I saw it in Singapore at a motor show. Very good looking car. It actually did quite well in Singapore, bearing in mind the price and the COE. But Malaysia price has not been announced. I gave a guess of about 240 max. Because if they go more than that, they're encroaching on Audi pricing.
So if you don't know what a Volkswagen Arteon is, it's a Passat with a hatchback boot. And
Fastback
boot.
Yes.
So it's got a slightly coupe body line.
Yes.
And to me, it's the most gorgeous.
It's Volkswagen a good looking car. It's a good looking.
Moving on from Volkswagen to Audi, the new A4 facelift was revealed with a new line of mild hybrid engines. A touchscreen display, and the weird part is the old Audi S4, which was legendary for its 3-litre V6 petrol engine, has now been replaced by a 3-litre V6 turbo diesel engine, which might cause a bit of ruckus. What do you think about that?
Plenty of ruckus, because you know why? Nobody wants an engine like
exactly.
this.
Exactly. They're going through Dieselgate, and then they launch one of their most popular cars with a diesel.
we need them to figure it out.
Yeah. Right, we have to take a break, ladies and gents. When we come back, we have a car review. It is the Audi Q8, courtesy of Daniel. Of course, you are listening to Cruise Control, the car show here on BFM 89.9, the business station. Stick around, we'll be right back. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, the business station. This is Cruise Control, the car show here on BFM. My name is Rich Bradbury. I'm in the studio as usual with Daniel Fernandez from DSF.my. Say hello.
Hola!
And of course, the man with the news, Mr. Arif Ruz.
Surprised we're not doing the car thing.
Vroom. That was only for F1 Legends. Nicky Lauda.
Yeah. If you missed any part of the show, don't forget, you might want to listen back to the first part of the show where we spoke about the legend of Nicky Lauda and, of course, some news coming out of Thailand and some local car launches. If you want to get back to that, just download the podcast, rewind, and listen back at your leisure. Meanwhile, we have a car review.
Yes.
Daniel, please, take it away.
Number one, this is called an Audi Q8. Number two, it does not come from Kuwait. Number three, it's the largest SUV in the Audi lineup in terms of heft, not in terms of length.
Review finished. Well done.
Okay. And thank you very much. No, I was very excited to get this vehicle because when I first saw it a few months ago in the showroom, they said, oh, you know, the test car is not ready. We're not registering it yet and all that because of the price. Mm. So I assumed the price of almost ₱1 million, looking at how it looks like. You know, you look at the pictures, it's amazing.
It's a very good looking car.
Yeah, but then they officially launched it and then they put a price of 720,000 and I said, whoa, this is shocking because what you get and what you pay, two different things. But all the time I was looking at the car and admiring it in terms of how it, the design, it's futuristic, it's almost a standout against the competition. So we decided to see what's the competition, starting with the Range Rover Velar, which is a really good looking vehicle. But you know, very hard edge, squarish, sharp lines.
Pop-up door handles.
Then you got the Mercedes GLC Coupe AMG, which is in the same price range. But that's rather common in its look. Yes, the AMG has got a lot of nice features on it, but the extra power and all. But it's still something which is very common in terms of looks. Then you got the Porsche Cayenne, which is the granddaddy of all performance SUVs. You know, when you talk about SUVs, you always go back to the Porsche Cayenne, unless you want to be totally different. Then you have the Maserati Levante, which is my personal favorite. But, you know, it's not because of anything but, you know, the pronunciation Maserati. No, but Maserati is very emotional, you know, Ferrari engine, beautiful interior, executed with the best materials. But now comes Audi challenging all these guys and saying, hey, come, let's play. And first off, when you get into the vehicle, it is wide. When you park it, it's almost as wide as a Toyota Alphard.
Whoa.
It's low, it's wide. It comes with adaptive suspension, so, you know, it sits very low on the ground unless you raise it up. Now, beyond the size and everything, you can go to DSF and get all the size fixes. That's not really the point of this whole review. The point of this whole review is, I'm paying 720,000. What do I get? I get into this SUV. I start off in heavy traffic on the federal highway. It's nice. It's comfortable. And then I start noticing something really unusual. People are taking pictures because they haven't seen one. They don't know what this is. It doesn't look like a Q. You know, it doesn't look like any of the Q cars, the Q2, the Q3, the Q5. It doesn't even look like the Q7.
It almost looks like a concept car that Audi forgot to tell us about.
Exactly. Something that came straight out of the motor show. So then I realized how unusual and how intimidating this car looks. And even at some point, people were actually pointing and putting the thumbs up. And I said, wow, I'm like a rock star and it only cost me 720,000 ringgit. Then I got into a little bit of an open highway. And I put it in sports mode. Now, I only had the car for 6 hours, so I was not bothered about fuel consumption or, you know, how CO2 emissions. You know why? Because if you're paying 700,000, you're not bothered about all this. You can buy fuel, you know. If you wanted a fuel economy car, you go buy something 2 liter or below. So I wanted to just exploit it. And despite its size and heft, in sports mode, with the suspension in a lower stance, this vehicle drives like a sports sedan. And then after driving it for a couple of hours, you know, I stopped to take some photos. As you can see, we went off-road. It's a very
again.
And in very treacherous terrain.
Is it the same place you went off-road before?
With the Toyota Hilux.
Yes. Yes. Okay.
Yeah. You know? So from your review, this Audi Q8 is just as capable as a
Toyota Hilux. Because this is treacherous terrain we went to. And I realized one thing. The rear seat comfort, I was sitting in the car, aircon running, and I was just looking around the rear of the cabin, and I realized many, many years ago, I test drove the Audi A6 S-Line. And suddenly, I felt myself back in an A6 S-Line. So, in a small way, if you want a large, comfortable sedan, but also you want the ability to look really different on the road, and have that SUV and that off-road functionality, suddenly the Q8 makes a lot of sense. Because it's got a lot of space, a lot of leg room. Yet, it can go off-road. I mean, not treacherous off-road, but you know, it can go off-road if you want it to.
Off-road, you mean those car parks that are like off the road?
Hey, got grass, huh? Look at the pictures.
There's trees behind it.
Yes. Right. There's trees behind me too.
It's parked on grass. It's not parked on tarmac, okay? So we took it out and then we took it back on the highway and we're driving it. And yes, top speed is great. Insulation is fantastic. Material quality is good. I have to say, the one thing which I didn't like, and I know you're going to ask me later, the one thing which I didn't like about this car is the material quality in it did not feel like a high-end vehicle.
Looking at the pictures of the car, it's a Q8, the number is bigger than the Q7, but right. The Q7 is far more posh.
Yes, that's the right word, posh.
Yeah. So where is this car supposed to be?
I'm not sure, but I think, you know, it's drawing people to it purely on its looks and purely that it stands out in the crowd. But the right word, posh, is not there. And I thought to myself, okay, maybe because this is the initial model that comes out. Maybe Audi is sitting down somewhere and planning an RS version. Because the RS cars come with a very nice, posh interior.
Yes.
A lot of soft touch panels. Higher quality, great on the leather and everything else. This is what this vehicle needs. And you know, even if they push the price up to 800,000, I think if you had that Porsche interior, people will take it over the Porsche Cayenne. Because why? It drives like a Porsche Cayenne.
Wait, Volkswagen Group. I mean, is the platform the same one as the Lamborghini?
No, it's not. But a lot of things are shared. If you see, I've got some pictures of the engine bay. A lot of the engine bay parts have a little Volkswagen logo on it. So theoretically, it's still coming from the group. So end of the day, there's nothing wrong because, you know, platform sharing, component sharing, it makes things cheaper to own and cheaper to run.
Mm.
So now we think about the power. 3-liter V6, 8-speed Triptronic gearbox, 335 brake horsepower. Doesn't sound like a lot with the size, but it really moves this vehicle. It really gives that impression that it's fast. And there was no time that I felt that this car was sluggish or lacking in power or anything like that. 500 Newton meters of torque. It comes in as early as 1,300 revolutions. So if you're sitting in traffic light and some joker next to you in, say, a Porsche 911 tries to be funny with you, you will not be able to overtake him, but you'll be able to chase him and keep behind him. Because the 0 to 100 dash is 5.9 seconds.
Wow.
And in a car this big, 5.9 seconds is quite good. I mean, the Porsche will do it in 4 seconds or just under 4 seconds. But that 1.9 seconds, it's still going to scare that guy. So all this for 727,000, I think it's a pretty good deal if you're looking to really stand out in the car park. But whether you can accept that lack of poshness on the interior, I think you will, because you'll be having posh exterior.
I like the look of it on the exterior, for sure. It looks aggressive. It looks like something I can get behind. What about, you know, the kind of lighting panels, the dashboards?
Oh.
Nice.
And, you know, the panels, you know, it's all screens nowadays, just like what all the other brands have. And these screens look exactly like what you find in the new Porsche Panamera and the Porsche Cayenne. Of course, the functionality is different. Mm. They've got more added features and all that because, you know, Audi will always be a little bit unusual with their drive select features and all that. But it's almost the same. I think it's coming from the same manufacturer. At the back, probably says the same company that manufactured it. It's just that, you know, the interface is slightly different. They make it unique for Audi. And the multifunction steering wheel and everything else, everything feels premium, feels, I wouldn't use the word posh, but feels expensive enough to say, I've got $1 million vehicle with me.
6-point inspection then on the Audi Q8. Number one, who are its competitors?
I mentioned just now the Range Rover Vela from UK, your country, the Maserati Levante from Italy, and the Porsche Cayenne from Germany.
2 and 3 back-to-back. What did you like about it and what don't you like about it?
What I loved about it was the looks. The looks drop-dead gorgeous from every angle. I don't like it in white. I want it in the gold.
I was about to say that. In white, it kind of pulls the eyes away from the lines.
Exactly, exactly. But in that gold, which is a signature color, bang for your buck. And you know, being dark skinned and driving a gold car won't be the most flattering to my ego, but I will do it. Okay. I will do it.
And yes, you didn't sir. Like, what else didn't you like? Just the color?
I just didn't like that. That's all.
That's it?
Yes.
There's no other negative downers?
No, at this price. Because you know what? Everything else is more expensive. Only the Levante is priced very close. Everything else is in 800,000, 900,000.
Is this the only Q8 you can get for now?
This is the only Q8. One model, one lineup. That's it. In the region.
In the region?
Yes.
Do you think they're going to be launching anything else?
Like I said, I'm sure the RS version will come out, or at least an S-line version in the near future with a lot more kit in it and a lot more Porsche-ness in it.
Next question. Why buy a Q8 when a Q7 costs 130,000 ringgit less? Because, like you said, it's not quite as posh.
Right.
But the Q8 is way more individualistic. But it's 130,000 ringgit.
Okay, I like the fact you brought it up, because someone else who saw me driving this just happened to message me and said, hey, why are you driving the Q8? Is it worth the money? Now, the Q7, when it first came out, the first generation Q7, which is rounded lines and all that, I think till today, 9 years later, it's still a very good-looking SUV. Yep. It still looks very modern.
Yep.
2 years ago, when the Q7 came out, I said, no way. They've got it all wrong. It looked too much like a Volkswagen Touareg, and it just didn't call to me. And today, if you see one on the road, it doesn't impress you.
It's just another big Audi.
It's just another big, brash-looking metal hunk of a car. And I don't see people going into the showroom and saying, hey, I like that, you know? If they want something like that, really big, that kind of price range, there's so much to offer. You can buy a Range Rover Velar for that money.
True.
2 liter. But this one stands out. This one stands out in any car park, any street. And you know, if you want the rock star image on a highway, this is what you got
to
buy.
So you're paying 130,000 ringgit extra to stand out.
Of course, dude. Because when you're in this price range, why do you buy a designer handbag?
Yeah,
is it because it carries more stuff?
No, it's because your husband bought it for you.
Exactly.
Final question. There is an alternative choice.
Yes.
Mercedes-Benz GLE 43 Coupe, which is equally as striking.
Actually, a little bit of correction. GLC 63 AMG is the closest to it in terms of price.
Yeah.
Of course, more power and everything else.
What about the GLE 43 Coupe?
GLE 43 is fantastic. Great value for money, but it's about 400,000, which is 200,000 plus cheaper. If you take it closer to the GLC 63 AMG, which has got lots of power, lots of kit, and it looks so aggressive, I will still go for this. Because why? When you're in this price range, how fast can you go?
Good point.
Today, how fast can you go? There's cameras everywhere. Anthony, look, it's really coming down on all of us.
They did just mention 22 new cameras on the plus
side. Exactly.
Yes,
so,
they did.
You know, if you drive that car, yes, it sounds aggressive and everything else. It's nice to drive. It's corners and all that. But you just want to be a rock star, baby? You buy this car.
My word. That's it. Time for us to wrap up for this week, ladies and gents. Thanks for joining us, of course.
Rockstar rapper.
I don't know what he's doing over there. But we will be back, of course, next week for more Cruise Control here on BFM. If you miss any part of the show, don't forget you can download it from the app, which is available in the Apple App Store or Google Play, and we are on Spotify too. My name is Rich Bradbury. On behalf of Daniel Fernandez and Arif Ruse, this has been Cruise Control here on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.